Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable
Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session pursuant to adjournment. Acting Commissioner Elizabeth Wall presiding.
Please be seated. We have one case scheduled for oral argument this morning, case number 2012-1971. And for the appellant, Mrs. Gallenstein, is this Mr. McPeak?
McPeak, correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Your Honor, Brad McPeak for the record on behalf of the appellant. And if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, in the proceedings below, in our briefs, we make essentially two basic arguments. The first argument is that under precedent from this court and the Board of Tax Appeals, any use whatsoever is not sufficient to trigger the use tax in Ohio. The use must be quote unquote substantial. And for reasons we explain in our brief, the activity by Indiana resident Mrs. Gallenstein with her, Kentucky resident Mrs. Gallenstein with her Indiana boat, the fleeting contacts with Ohio that she had do not qualify. That's number one. The second contention that we make is that even if the use tax was triggered in this instance, there is an exception that applies that takes this instance out of the use tax. And specifically, that's 5741.02C4 combined with the boat registration statute. And what I would like to do is tackle those maybe in reverse order. And with respect to this second contention, with respect to the exception, I think based on the briefs and based on what's happened below, both sides agree at this point that question all comes down to this phrase, temporarily transiting. And I'm not sure if the court has had an opportunity to look at all this and has seen this, but our argument is based on everything we have seen that temporarily transiting really has no meaning out there, and that this body would have to invent a meaning and insert that in the statute. And we base that, number one, on the fact that when one looks at the Code of Federal Regulations and looks at the parts of the code that govern different documentation levels for watercraft, there's no such level for temporarily transiting. It doesn't exist anywhere. That's number one. Number two, if you do it not the old-fashioned way, but you just put that phrase into Westlaw, which obviously has access to millions and millions of documents, interestingly enough, the only document that comes up is this case. I think it was either my brief in the Board of Tax Appeals or the actual decision of the Board of in the Board of Tax Appeals. No other case, no other law review article, no Code of Federal Regulations uses that phrase anywhere. And I think what the other side would have this court do is invent meaning for something that really has no meaning.
Well, now, counsel, you do agree, right, with the commissioner's general contention that usually the General Assembly does not put words in a statute that have no meaning. And so even if it wasn't contemplating an existing regulation, isn't it possible that the General Assembly was, as the commissioner says, thinking of something that might happen down the line?
Maybe I don't give the General Assembly as much credit as the other side does, but I will say that there is precedent from this court. I think the case is Hunt v. Held, that when a phrase really has no meaning, when this court can't give meaning to something, it doesn't have to invent meaning. That's number one.
Well, I guess I wonder, even if that phrase isn't precisely used in U.S. Coast Guard documentation as it presently exists or the regulations, couldn't we find some meaning for that phrase? And if so, do you have any argument that this vessel was temporarily transiting, even if that phrase doesn't appear precisely in the documentation?
I'm glad the court asked that question, because I think in preparing for today, I did wrestle with all of this. It's unusual to have a phrase that has no meaning anywhere, as this phrase does. So what the solution I came up with looking at this was, if one looks at the boat registration statute that's made up, there's two clauses, and I can read this, I think. Pardon me for reading it, but I think it'll help explain it better. The first says, essentially, those boats that have been documented by the United States Coast Guard or its successor as temporarily transiting. And then there's a comma. And I kind of went back to eighth grade or seventh grade grammar, where you learn about oppositions, and maybe that was fourth grade, I don't remember. But it goes on to say, whose principal use is not on the waters in this state and that have not been used within this state for more than 60 days. And my thought was, maybe that part of the statute after the comma is the definition we've all been looking for. And of all the solutions that have been proposed or not proposed, as the case may be, with respect to this exception, to me, that is the most likely.
Well, if that's the case, then is there any indication in the Coast Guard documentation that the principal use of this vessel is not on the waters of Ohio and that it hasn't been used in Ohio for more than 60 days?
The record below, Your Honor, was, I think, the Gallensteins, when they did their federal documentation, they were asked to identify the principal waters where it would be used. And they had to check a box. And from memory, it was either Kentucky or Indiana. I think it was Indiana, Your Honor. I know it wasn't Ohio. And I think the record is very clear on that. And then with respect to the 60 days part, what the Gallensteins testified to was from 2002 to 2005, they think they were in Ohio 5 to 10 times for day cruises. After that, which is after the audit period, it was twice a year. And I asked them below, and they responded that if you look at all the times you've been in Ohio over the course of your ownership of this boat, would add up to 60 days, and the answer was no. And that evidence wasn't contradicted below. And I think this court it's this court's place to look at the law, I think, as opposed to the facts. And right now, the record is unrefuted on that point.
Mr. McPeak, if I can lead you down a slightly different avenue, still involving the transient use exception. I guess I wonder what your position is on whether use can ever be transient if we're looking not so much at the operation of a boat in Ohio, but where the use itself is registration in Ohio. Is that ever going to be transient, given that if an owner has registered in Ohio, that registration is active presumably every day of the registration period? So how, just by the very nature of transient use, how could that fit that exception?
You know, I hadn't thought of that, whether or not registration starting in 2003 starts adding on the days. In my mind, I think when one looks at the statute and how it is written, they're talking about actual enjoyment of the watercraft in Ohio waters. And I haven't seen anything that suggests mere registration is enough to bring the use of this pleasure craft within the ambit of the statute. And I think that really gets us to the second argument, which is this has to be substantial, and it's our view that mere registration was not enough. And maybe going to the court's question, when one looks at pleasure craft cases in the context of the use tax, there's sort of, in my mind, and I think I've read most of the cases in the last 3 years out there, most of the cases, there's basically a bright line that's been drawn where it's fairly predictable. The courts and the Board of Tax Appeals find substantial use when, number one, typically the taxpayer is an Ohio citizen, someone who goes and buys the boat somewhere else, like in Florida, and brings it here for whatever reason. That's a common factor in all these cases. Number two, the boat is stored or docked in Ohio. That's a common factor again. And then third, I'm not a boat guy, but it seems to me that these things require constant maintenance and repair. And typically, in all these cases, there is some level of repair of the entire boat that takes place in Ohio. And our position is that based on this precedent, taxpayers have a fairly predictable guide, and mere registration would be outside that. The court would be expanding the frontier, really, of what substantial use means in the context of the use tax. So going back to the court's question, I think the way to answer it is registration is not enough.
Has the BTA or this court ever held that registration is not enough, or that are identified other factors that are not enough and found that there isn't sufficient use to trigger the tax?
I think, Your Honor, looking back at the cases I've read, and like I said, I think I've read most of the boat cases, and I really confined myself to those decisions. I do believe there were cases where there was registration combined with those other things I mentioned. For whatever reason, Beckstead versus Levin comes to mind, but I may be incorrect there. But as I said, it wasn't just registration with an out-of-state taxpayer whose boat was stored somewhere else, who rarely came into Ohio. Was someone who planted the boat in Ohio at a dock, who lived in Ohio, who repaired the boat in Ohio. I think finally, the only argument I really see on this substantial use issue from the other side is the other side takes issue and thinks that maybe this court made a mistake in a case called Big Boy's Toy versus Limbach, which is where we get the phrase substantial use from. And I think my initial thought on that, Your Honor, is that it's really a distinction without a difference. We equate substantial nexus with substantial use, and we think the court does the same, because in its discussion of the issue, before it uses the phrase substantial use, the court said substantial nexus. Then it went on to describe what that means, and that's when the phrase substantial use came up.
So are you attempting to make a dormant commerce clause challenge here, or argue that one's been preserved, or is that just your argument about how the court should apply the use tax itself?
Well, I think throughout this process, we've made the same argument that use must be substantial. And the Limbach case is a dormant commerce clause case, and this is the first level we're allowed to raise that issue. As I understand it from the Beckstead case, you can't make constitutional arguments below. And I believe our first and second assignments of error deal with this. We say this was not a substantial use.
So it's your contention that you've preserved that challenge.
Correct. But anyway, going back to this distinction between substantial use versus substantial nexus, the other factor I think that leads us to believe that a mistake was not made by this court is that when one looks at the discussion of substantial use and substantial nexus, the court was actually instructing the Board of Tax Appeals that it had used the wrong standard below. And we think under those circumstances, it wouldn't use words that were incorrect. It would use the correct standard if it was giving direction to a court and affirmatively saying that, hey, you made a mistake below, this is the right standard. With that, I'll reserve the rest of our time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. McPeak. Ms. Baldwin?
Good morning. May it please the court. Your Honor, the Gallensteins are here today defending a plan that they've come up with to avoid paying any tax to the state of Ohio for the use of their 44-foot yacht. They're asking this court to bless this plan, but what they're asking for is contrary to both Ohio's tax law and Ohio policy. Ohio imposes a use tax on property that's used in this state. And under any criteria, the Gallensteins have met the standard to owe this tax on their use of the yacht and the special statute that they say applies, the transient use exemption, does not excuse them from paying this tax. Now, in Ohio, a tax is imposed on personal property used in the state and use is defined as exercising a right or power incidental to one's ownership of the item. This court has said that use in that definition is to be given an everyday and plain meaning and is to be interpreted broadly. It does not take much to demonstrate use under the terms of the statute. Now, in this case, the Gallensteins have used the word substantial use and sufficient use. Those are terms, as Mr. McPeak has said, that have constitutional implications. They refer specifically to the four-part constitutional analysis that was set forth in the Complete Auto case by the United States Supreme Court. But the constitutional question is not what's before this court.
Ms. Baldwin, let's assume for a moment that challenge has been preserved and is somehow active through this briefing process. What's your response to the Dormant Commerce Clause argument then? Would this pass the Complete Auto Parts test?
Yes, it does, because there has been active use of this yacht within the state, and the constitutional protections are afforded in this case because there has been no tax paid anywhere else. Ohio is the state that where it has been used and where a tax is due. So, yes, to answer your question.
So regardless of whether the court were to have a standard of substantial use or any minimal use, you believe that the standard has been met here?
Yes, yes. The difficulty with the substantial use phraseology that's been put forth in this case is that, first of all, it's being grafted and imposed upon the statutory analysis, which would be the first consideration in this case. Has there been a use that meets the, the statutory definition of that term. After that, there would then be a constitutional analysis where the constitutional terms would be considered. The reliance on Big Boy's toy, however, is misplaced. That case, when it went on remand back to the Board of Tax Appeals, the Board of Tax Appeals said that we don't understand what this term substantial use is. That doesn't come from the complete auto case. That's not been the standard that's been set forth by the United States Supreme Court. Ran out of breath. And so the court declined to apply the substantial use test and instead applied the four-part United States standard. Since the Big Boy toy case, this court has consistently applied the standards set forth in Complete Auto. Central Transport, Narandex, Midwest Physicians, all post-date Big Boy's toy and set forth the standard that's to be considered.
To step away from the standard and arguments about that for a moment, let's talk about the use here. Is the commissioner focused primarily on the registration as the BTA seemed to, or is the commissioner looking more at active operation in Ohio or arguing that any one of these things would be adequate?
There has been an active use of this vessel in the state. Any one of those active uses is sufficient to meet the statutory standard.
I guess on that regard, I have the audit period here looks like it was May 1st through June 30th of 2003,
right.
If I'm recalling correctly.
Well,
and is there any evidence in the record of active operation during those 2 months? And if not, then what is the relevance of all this other testimony in the record about use in Ohio outside that two-month period? Are we only looking at that window?
No, I don't believe we're looking at that window. Because the use tax is a tax on the enjoyment of property brought into the state, it's viewed in conjunction with the sales tax. So if a sales tax had been, I think that time period was used as if it was, there was a purchase. Oh, I'm digging a hole and going deeper, I'm sorry. It was just, there's either a sales tax imposed on the purchase of the vessel at the time of the transaction. So once it was brought into Ohio, it's a one-time transaction, just as if a sales tax had been paid. The use tax is a one-time transaction. So I think that's why that audit period lists the tax for that time segment.
I guess I was a little confused by that audit period, primarily because the investigation seemed to occur in 2005. The boat was purchased in 2002.
Yes.
The date of registration occurred in the middle of the audit period.
Right.
I was just trying to nail
it
down.
It was the registration that triggered the audit. So once the registration happened, the communication followed through to the tax department to see if the use tax had been paid or if a sales tax had been paid when the vessel was purchased. So I think that's where the audit period all links in with the registration, having spoken through this.
And I guess to ask another sort of factual question based on the record, I noticed that the auditor informed Mrs. Gallenstein that if she withdrew her registration or canceled this license, she wouldn't be liable for the use tax or subject to this tax. Does that amount to a concession of sorts? And I guess this goes to the transient use exception, that she was not required to register in Ohio, or should the commissioner on some level be stopped from arguing that she wasn't required to register given that representation?
I think what the auditor was getting at is a concept called registration reciprocity. So that when a vessel owner registers their boat with a state, let's say Ohio, and because all vessels that use Ohio waterways must be registered to use Ohio's waterways, you are generally, except in this case, stating that this is your primary use of that vessel. And with that, you're taking care of whatever tax consequences flow from that event. Indiana, Kentucky, other states rely on that registration to then afford an exemption from registration because you've done it in another state and you're just visiting or passing through their state, you're not planning on staying. And with that, there is also an exemption from any tax consequences from being in their state on the premise that you've taken care of that in the state where you registered.
Can you point me to the statutory section that says you're exempt from registration in Ohio if you've registered in another state?
It is under 1547.531B1. It's a numbering, it's an exempt from numbering in the state, and it directs you then to 1547.53, I think it's Division B, which says if you're exempt from numbering if your principal use is in another state and you've registered there. So it's a multi-step process. So what the agent was getting at was if you take your registration out of here where you're not principally using the boat, the vessel, and you register it where you are principally using the vessel, fine. Whatever tax consequences flow from that incident will flow to that jurisdiction and will be out of the picture. There is then, I'll stop there. So there were other examples of use within this state. The Gallensteins brought the vessel into the state and watched Cincinnati Reds and Bengals games. They attended the Labor Day fireworks on the river in the Cincinnati area. They brought anywhere from 25 to 30 guests at a time on boating excursions in the area. Now, they try to dismiss this use by saying it, they only can, now, my recollection is that it was 10 times in a season that they came, and I thought I cited that pretty accurately based on the testimony in the from the Board of Tax Appeals hearing. But if one equates a boating season to a school summer break time period, that would be taking a boating excursion about one time a week. The Gallensteins did register the vessel, and that's a manifestation of their intent to use it in Ohio in conjunction with what was active use. Because again, they try to dismiss the significance by saying they registered only to stop being stopped by law enforcement in the Cincinnati area who wanted to check their registration. But it worked. So they were using the yacht in the Cincinnati area both before and after registration. They've also used resources located in this state. They brought the vessel's engine in for rebuilding when it apparently had blown up, and Mr. Gallenstein took it to his preferred vendor in Sharonville, Ohio. They stayed at a marina overnight once where they docked the boat for that evening. And the boat purchase was negotiated from an Ohio location, Mr. Gallenstein's business location, with resources located there. So they've used it in the state. They've also actively connected their use of this yacht to the state by providing an Ohio address for all communication pertaining to this vessel on the registration papers, the federal documentation papers, and on all audit correspondence. There was always an Ohio address listed, and that was Mr. Gallenstein's business address.
Ms. Baldwin, the commissioner didn't assign any error to the BTA's determination of a factual finding that Mrs. Gallenstein was a non-resident and not a tourist in this situation.
Right.
What basis do you have for sort of raising these factual arguments here? Our jurisdiction?
The commissioner does not agree with the BTA's findings there, but you're correct. There was no cross appeal filed, and that's really not the issue that's presented in this appeal. Instead, what's presented is the board's final determination that the transient use exemption does not apply. This court has held repeatedly that just because an incorrect rationale may have been used to reach a decision, that's not a reason to reverse the decision. So the same would apply here. Even if the board applied an incorrect rationale, the ultimate result was right. So Turning to the transient use exemption, there is a presumption in Ohio that any use of personal property occurs in a taxable transaction, and that any deviation from that presumption must be strictly construed in favor of taxation, and the taxpayer must affirmatively establish their right to that deviation. The transient use provision is a deviation from the presumption of taxation, and the Galensteins have not demonstrated how they're entitled to its use. First of all, the vessel has not been transient within the state. They've actively used it in the state. It has a presence.
What would be your definition of transient?
You know, temporary, shortened time or duration. Perhaps the more relevant one is what constitutes temporarily transiting. And the board did not give that a definition, although they appear to have given that a use as an adjective as opposed to a noun, like a form of registration that the Coast Guard recognizes. Just passing through appears to be a reasonable interpretation of temporarily transiting, and I think the commissioner would take issue with Mr. McPeak's reading of the statute and where those commas are placed, because it looks as if it's really a three-part test. There's part one, as documented as temporarily transiting, part two, the principal use, comma, and part three, not used in the state more than 60 days. So it looks as if it's three parts there.
Would your reading of this exception specifically require the words temporarily transiting to appear in Coast Guard documentation for someone to meet this?
No, no. If somebody is just passing through, that would be temporary.
How would that be indicated in Coast Guard documentation, looking at these certificates as they're currently written? Where would that appear? What would I be looking for?
Well, I think the recreational use, but in conjunction with the other uses. So if the vessel is documented as recreational, but it's got a Indiana registration, and I see my time is up.
You may finish your thought.
Thank you. And they have an Indiana registration, and that's where it's primarily used, then that would be temporarily transiting, and the exception would apply.
Okay.
So with that said, the Board of Tax Appeals determined that the Galensteins' use of the yacht in Ohio obligated them to pay the use tax, and no provision applied to excuse that payment. The standard of review in this case requires this court to affirm a board decision that's reasonable and lawful and supported by sufficient evidence. The board decision meets this standard, so the commissioner requests that this court affirm that decision.
Thanks, Ms. Baldwin. Mr. McPeak, you have 3 minutes and 41 seconds left.
Excellent. I've never actually had extra before. I guess I want to just go over a couple of these factual considerations first. With respect to the audit period, my understanding is the only activity in the record that occurred during that audit period was what triggered the audit actually was the registration. I think if the court goes back and looks at the record, the registration happened in like May or June of 2003, which was within that 2 month audit period. And as I understand it, as an aside, I think the investigators look at the boats that are registered and use that list to go out and conduct their investigations.
Do you disagree and think that the court should not look to any active operation outside that 2 month period?
Your Honor, what we're doing, I guess, is we want to clarify the record. We're not running from the testimony below, which was that this was used, and there's a question of was it per season or not per season. I went back and looked last night because I think both sides do it differently, and I think I've actually been inconsistent in my briefing. But the testimony was that it was not per season. It was 2002 to 2005, 5 to 10 times period. And the boating season for them was May to the beginning of November. So you're talking about a fairly long boating season on the Ohio River, I guess, versus Lake Erie and other places. The other thing, too, I guess, as I was sitting here listening, was if temporarily transiting now means just passing through, I don't understand how this does not apply to us, because in all instances, the Galensteins were just passing through. went from cruises in Indiana waters across the line where Ohio and Kentucky meet, and probably most of the time we're in Kentucky based on the map, although I don't think there's evidence there, but as a guy who grew up in Cincinnati, we have about 10 feet of the river, the rest belongs to Kentucky. But they go into Ohio and they cruise back on these day cruises. That is just passing through, and if that's going to be the standard, I think we win under that exception. And I will point out also, I do think some of these things are outside the record, like negotiations for the boat took place from the office. I don't think that's in there. I think they're relying on maybe a fax line that's on a offer to purchase. But I'll say that very well could be what they sent to our office, or was sent back and forth from our office. It's not clear in the record that that's how the negotiations took place, for whatever it's worth. I think at the end of the day, we're coming down to whether or not mere registration is enough. And with that, we ask the court to reverse, because if the court affirms, we'll have a whole new, I guess the frontier of use tax will be extended far beyond what has existed previously. Thanks.
Thank you both. The case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
Thank you.